Are you feeling purified after chanting these verses? Because these are not ordinary sounds. So when we chant, there is a tremendous purifying effect on the heart. Because we are actually discussing topics connected with the Lord and His devotees. So therefore, as we were discussing during the sessions on Gita Mahatmya, we should regularly recite shlokas from the Bhagavad Gita as a daily practice. And it should be done with faith and devotion, and it should be done regularly. Then these shlokas will give us the required benefit. Last time we covered the first 8 verses of the very first chapter of the Gita. We saw that the Bhagavad Gita, or the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is the prelude to the rest of the text. And it is the background, the historical background in which the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken. We have seen that very intelligently Ved Vyas has placed this most important philosophical message in the midst of a great story, the story of all stories. And he has placed it right at a very crucial juncture, when everyone's attention is riveted to the story. What is going to happen now? Who will fight with whom? Who will die? Who will emerge victorious? Who will take the throne of Hastinapur? So when the reader's attention, the hearer's attention is at its peak, this is when Lord Krishna will give us the most important philosophical message. So we are still dealing with the historical background in which Dhritarashtra, being fearful of the outcome of the battle, due to the battle being fought at the holy place of Kurukshetra, is asking Sanjaya, what will happen to all my friends, to all my sons? Namakaha Pandava Saiva Kimma Kurvata Sanjaya. What did they do? Having assembled the Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yugutsavaha. What did my sons and the sons of Pandu do, having assembled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Now, when two parties are assembled on a battlefield, facing each other with upraised weapons in a militaristic spirit, what is the point in asking, what did they do? Naturally, they fought. Just like, if you put a nice plate of food in front of a hungry person and then ask, what did he do? Well, he ate the food. So why did Dhritarashtra ask such a simple question? Because he's doubtful. Yes, they did assemble to fight, but they were in the holy place of Kurukshetra. So maybe the holy place had an effect on my sons. And my son, who were earlier following the path of adharma, perhaps they have chosen the path of dharma and they have given up the idea of fighting. Perhaps they have renounced their claim to the throne. So Dhritarashtra did not want that. He wanted his sons to be on the throne. And he was also thinking, perhaps the holy place has had an influence on the sons of Pandu also, because they were very much in the path of dharma. Maybe they exercise their faculty of discrimination and thought that, well, we should not kill our own relatives just for property, so let us renounce our claim to the throne. So Dhritarashtra was thinking that in spite of them having assembled on the battlefield in a hostile mood, maybe they give up the idea of fighting. Just like when you place a place of so many nice foodstuffs in front of someone, then you may think, oh, does he have diabetes? Will he eat the sugar? Or does he have this disease? Will he take that? So similarly, Dhritarashtra was thinking, this is a holy place. We don't know what may happen. Perhaps the minds of these people may have changed. And then Sanjaya encourages him. because he knows what is there in his heart. So he says, immediately he starts off with Duryodhana speaking. When Duryodhana approaches Dronacharya and is urging him, he is actually assessing the warriors in the side of the Pandavas. And last time, we also discussed the character of each of these, a brief biography of each of the great warriors on the Pandu side. Now, one may wonder that in this first chapter, especially in the first 15 verses or so, there are many descriptions of great warriors who fought on the battlefield. So, what is the need for descriptions of battle or descriptions of warriors in a spiritual book? What has that got to do with our liberation from the cycle of birth and death? What has that got to do with anything spiritual? It is just a battle. It is just a war. So what is the need for such a description? Factually, anything that is connected with Lord Krishna becomes spiritual by virtue of that connection. Just like anything connected with fire becomes fiery. If you hold a rod of iron in the fire, very soon it ceases to behave like an ordinary rod of iron. If you touch that rod, your finger will burn, because that iron, due to contact with the fire, has acquired the properties of fire. Similarly, anything that is done in connection with Lord Krishna's activities, or his name, or his pastimes, also become transcendental or spiritual. So therefore, hearing descriptions of these great personalities is not a mundane or a material activity. Otherwise, what was the need for Vedavyas to put it in this great timeless spiritual classic, the Bhagavad Gita? So, we can hear brief description of all these personalities. Last time, we heard descriptions about great fighters on the Pandava side like Bhima, Arjuna, Virat, Drupad, Drishtaketu, Shaibya, Abhimanyu, and so on. Now, having finished the description of the warriors on the Pandava side, now Duryodhana wants to pump up the spirits of the warriors on his side. Duryodhana was thinking, I have just been glorifying the warriors on the Pandava side. And all my soldiers are hearing this conversation, so they should not get discouraged. So let me now narrate the glories of the warriors on my side. So we start today with chapter 9. We still continue the last line of the Pandavas warriors. Anya cha bhava shura madartho tvatta jivita Nana Shastra Praharanaha Sarve Yuddha Visharada. Duryodhana says, there are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. In text 8, Duryodhana had described some of the great warriors on his own side, like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Ashwatthama, Bhurishwava, and so on. And in order to also encourage the other stalwart personalities, he said, there are many others, Anni, who are also willing to give up their life for me, Jatta Jivitaha, Nana Shastra Praharanaha, and they are also well equipped in the military science. There were so many great, formidable warriors on this battlefield. Please remember that the Mahabharata was not an ordinary war. It was a world war. So, what happened in 1918 is not the first world war. There have been many world wars before in the past, and the greatest world war history has seen is this one, that took place in Kurukshetra 5,000 years ago. Bharat is India. Mahabharat is greater India, the whole world. So therefore in the scriptures, especially the Puranas, the whole planet is sometimes called Bharat Varsha.
So Bharat meant actually the whole world. And there was one flag, one king, the emperor, Samrat, who ruled from Hastinapur. And till the time of Maharaj Yudhishthir, this had gone on without interruption. So when the battle took place, or was about to take place, both sides gathered their allies from different parts of the world. Some came to fight on behalf of the Pandavas, some on behalf of the Kauravas. Gathered here in this battlefield in Kurukshetra were kings along with their armies who had come from all over the world simply to fight this battle. And this was Lord Krishna's arrangement to kill all the demoniac kings at one stroke. Nothing is difficult for God. He could have killed them in their respective palaces. But this was his pastime, his leela. He wanted to bring them all at one spot and kill not two birds with one stone, but 64 crore birds with one stone. Because there were 64 crore people who died in the battle of Kurukshetra, and all in the span of simply 18 days. This was the way wars were fought in the earlier times. Fight to the finish. Not like today. The terrorist wars linger on for years and years and years. Fight, finish. The Kshatriya would either emerge victorious or he would die. No third way out. And they would fight till they either killed the enemy or till they died themselves. This was the pattern. So there were many, many great such warrior kings and their assistants who had assembled and come from different parts. And according to their valor and capacity, these were classified differently. A person who was called an Ardharatha was a warrior who needed help to fight another single warrior. Then there were those who were called Yodha. Yodha means those who were able to fight with another warrior single-handed. Then there were those who were called Maharathis, who could fight 10,000 other soldiers single-handedly. And then there were those who were Atirathis, who could fight unlimited other soldiers single-handedly, like Bhishma. He could just fight with unlimited people, and he would shoot arrows from his bow unceasingly, like torrents they would flow out. Similarly with Arjuna, Karna. These were all great warriors, not ordinary. So there is a description of all these warriors, and we have seen a description of some of them in the past. So therefore, Duryodhana is saying that on my side too, there are great warriors, Nana Shastra Praharana, who are very, very expert. Sarve Yudha Visharadaha. Visharad means expert. They have great fighting skills. And all these soldiers have assembled here to lay down their life for me. This was a Kshatriya spirit. They didn't care for their life. They were here on one side, and if they had given a vow, they would shift to the other side. And then they would fight for that person till he died, even if he was formerly his enemy. So this was the principles on which the Kshatriyas fought in the earlier times. So now Duryodhana is going to make an analysis or an estimation of the strength of his army. So what is Duryodhana's estimation? Let us see what he says.
Aparyatam tadasmakam balam bhishma bhirakshitam paryaptam pudametesham balam bhima bhirakshitam.
Our strength is immeasurable, and we are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited.
Aparyaptam tadasmakam.
He is saying our strength is aparyaptam. There is no limit. Our strength is limitless, immeasurable. Why is it so? Balam bhishma abhirakshitam. Because our army is being protected by none other than Bhishma. Bhishma was a very, very exceptional warrior. He was by far the most powerful warrior on the battlefield. He had been given a benediction by his father, Shantanu, that he would not die except when he so wished to. Ichhamaran. He could choose the moment of his death. Even Drona had a similar benediction. Therefore, you will remember that Drona could not be killed by any of the warriors on the Pandava side. It was only when he heard the news, which was false, that his son Ashwatthama had died, and he was so attached to his son that he lost the will to live. And it was only then, when he lost the will to live, that the Pandavas could kill him. Otherwise, it was not possible to kill Drona. Similarly, with Bhishma, it was not possible for anyone to kill him. And he was so powerful, also partly because of his celibacy. He remained a celibate, which as a Kshatriya, who is in the mode of passion, is an extremely difficult thing to do. His earlier name was Devavrata. But when he took this terrible vow, terrible because for a Kshatriya it was terrible, not for a Brahmin, who is in the mode of goodness. So therefore the demigod showered flowers from behind the clouds when he took such a vow. And he got tremendous power because of that. So Bhishma Dev, the elderly grandsire of the Pandus and the Kauravas, he was there. Duryodhana had so much confidence in him, he thought that because we have Bhishma, his strength is immeasurable. And what about the strength of the Pandavas? It is limited. Paryaptam Pridamayatesham. Paryaptam, it is very limited. Being protected by Bhima. And he understood that all the soldiers in the Pandava side were insignificant, were like figs compared to Bhishma. Actually, when King Parikshit in the Srimad Bhagavatam Arjuna is speaking to in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the description of King Parikshit, yes. He tells Shukadeva Goswami that my grandfather and his brothers were great, very, very virtuous warriors, but nevertheless, in front of Bhishma, they were like small fish. Bhishma was like a timingala, and my fathers were like small fish in the ocean. Kurukshetra was like the ocean. Bhishma, Karna, Drona were like huge timingala fish, and my fathers, grandfathers, were like small fish. Now, a timi is like a huge whale, and a timingala is such a huge animal that it can swallow many timis. So you can imagine how big is a timingala. A whale swallows many fish effortlessly. A timi swallows many whales, and a timingala can swallow many timis. So how big is a timingala? And King Parikshit says that my grandfathers were like fish, and Bhishma and others were like timingala, but still my grandfathers emerged victorious. Why was this? Because Krishna was on their side. So this is the crucial point that Duryodhan is missing here in this analysis. This kind of analysis is typical of a person of materialistic mentality, who is ungodly, who is atheistic. He never considers divine shakti. He only considers everything from the point of view of material numbers, material strength, wealth, and so on. So therefore Duryodhan was considering, my army has the best generals, the best strategists, the best weapons, it has larger numbers. We have many more Akshauhini divisions in the army than the Pandavas do. So in every respect, we are superior. And we have warriors of the caliber of Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna. So therefore our strength is immeasurable. Whereas the Pandava side, the most powerful warrior is Bhima. And Bhima is nothing compared to Bhishma. Therefore, victory is ours. This was Duryodhan's conclusion. But Duryodhan did not understand that the only immeasurable force on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was not Bhishma, was not Arjun, neither Karna, Drona or anyone, but it was Lord Krishna. Even though Lord Krishna was not in the position of a warrior, he had taken a vow that he would not lift a weapon. So he was not fighting. He was simply the chariot driver of his devotee Arjuna. But yet, he was the only immeasurable force. But Duryodhan, being a typical materialist, did not understand this. In the Bhagavad Gita, later on, Lord Krishna will describe, Avajananti ma mura, manushin tanumashitam, param bhavam ajananto, manabhuta maheshwaram. Fools or mudhas do not recognize me, avajananti ma mura, manushin tanumashitam. When I come into this material world, because I appear to be like other human beings, so people think that I am also an ordinary human being. But they do not understand my superior nature, param bhavam ajananto. And they do not know that I am the Lord of all creation, mama bhuta maheshwaram. So Duryodhan did not understand this. Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting analogy. He says, all our material assets, like our wealth, our strength, our intelligence, our numbers, ability, home, money, everything, are like different zeros. So your money is one zero, your strength is another zero, your intelligence is another zero. Now by themselves, one zero after the other, it is simply zero. Even if you put 100 zeros one after the other, or 1,000,000 zeros, the total is still zero. But if you put a one in front of the zero, then that becomes very valuable. If you have only one zero, but you put one in front of that, it becomes 10. But if you have 1,000,000 zeros without the one, it's of no value. So all our material assets are like zeros. Lord Krishna is like the one. If you are using your money, your strength, your intelligence, your abilities, everything you have for the service of Lord Krishna, then these assets become meaningful, useful. Otherwise, they are simply zero. They are destined for failure. Similarly, Duryodhan's huge army, his power, his weapons, his generals, his grand strategies for success were all zero because Krishna was on the other side. This was what he failed to understand. But Arjun, on the other side, on the Pandava side, understood very well what was Krishna's power. You know the story that before the battle of Kurukshetra began, and when it was decided, when it became certain that the battle is going to be fought, immediately Duryodhan and Arjun both rushed towards Dwarka from Hastinapur, from their respective places. Arjun at that time actually was in the kingdom of Maharaj Virat, having completed the 13 years of exile, and Duryodhan was in Hastinapur. When Duryodhan heard that Arjuna is moving towards Dwarka from his spies, he also immediately left. And both of them reached at the same time. But Duryodhan entered first into the room of Lord Krishna in Dwarka, where Krishna was lying down to take rest. And immediately, Duryodhan being very proud, he went and sat down near Krishna's head on the bed. Krishna was still asleep. And Arjun, being the humble devotee, he sat near Lord Krishna's lotus feet. So the natural positions came out there. And then Krishna awoke. And because he awoke and he saw Arjuna sitting at his feet first, and then he saw Duryodhan later. And then both of them said, "We have come to you for help." So Krishna replied, "I saw Arjun first. So Arjun shall have the first say." But Duryodhan said, "But I came in first. He said, nevertheless, I saw him first. But anyway, he is the younger one. So the younger one has the choice first. Now, both of you choose. You can either have me without my weapons, without my fighting, and without my army, me and me alone, or you can have my army, the Narayan Sena, with all its weapons and generals and everything. Choose. What do you want? Arjun immediately chose, I want you. I don't care for your army. I want you. Duryodhan was only too happy to hear this. And he was thinking, how foolish is this Arjun? He doesn't even know what to ask for. And so very gladly he said, yes, I want your Narayan Sena. I want the army. Because Duryodhan was thinking in terms of numbers, in quantity, weapons, whereas Arjuna's consideration was spiritual. Where there is Krishna, where there is Arjuna, how can there ever be anything inauspicious? So Arjuna chose Krishna, and then Krishna came on the side of the Pandavas. The Pandavas also had many great generals, like we have discussed, and since they already had Krishna, so they had one and many zeros. So it became a huge number. But Duryodhan's side had many great generals but no Krishna. So many zeros, but the end result, zero. So this Duryodhan did not know. Therefore he was feeling very confident that we shall emerge victorious. And then he saw that I am glorifying Bhishma, but what about the others? So he thought that he should encourage the others and also give some importance to them. So we come to the 11th verse, where Duryodhan is continuing his speech to Dronacharya. Ayameshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avasthitah bhishman eva bhirakshantu bhavantah sarva evahi. All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. You see, the armies were always poised standing in front of each other. This was the way battles were fought in those days, not like the guerrilla warfare of today, where they throw bombs and run away. They would stand facing each other, and Dhanurvidya and military science taught various formations in which the armies would stand. And when the opposing party saw the enemy's formation, immediately they would get the corresponding formation, Vyuha. Vyuha means strategic formulations. So one was in the form of an eagle, then the other would take an appropriate form to combat that. So all the military generals, they were acquainted with all formations. And sometimes it was very difficult to penetrate these formations. And even if it was possible to penetrate, they would not come out, like Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu could penetrate into the Chakravyuha, but he did not know how to come out. Arjuna had not taught him that as yet, because he was only 16 years old. So he only knew the techniques of breaking that phalanx and getting into it. But he did not know the reverse. So he was stuck. So all these phalanxes have been arranged strategically in certain ways. Military warfare was very sophisticated in those days. And Duryodhan is now telling the others, he is implying through this verse, certainly I have glorified Bhishma. He is no doubt the greatest and most powerful warrior on the battlefield here. But still, he is an old man. And therefore, all of you must now not leave your respective positions in the phalanx. And you must guard Bhishma from all sides, so that the enemy should not attack him from behind or from the one side or the other side. So in this way, Duryodhan wanted to encourage others, so that they would also feel important, that they were being given importance by Duryodhan. And it is significant that Duryodhan actually approached Dronacharya, who was a commander-in-chief. Dronacharya was second in command only to Bhishma. So he wanted to make sure that everyone would be given importance, being a good politician, a diplomat, He didn't want anyone to feel that that person was not given importance. Then having heard the statements of Duryodhan, Bhishma became a little pleased, especially because he had been glorified like this in front of Dronacharya and the others. So what does Sanjay say? Now what happened after that? Duryodhan has now finished speaking.
Tasya sanjanayam harsham kuru vriddha putamaha singhanadam vunadyochaihi shankham dadma pratapavan.
Then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhan joy. When Duryodhan glorified Bhishma, Bhishma did not reply in words. Bhishma replied through his conch shell. It was a tradition in the battlefields that the warriors, before the battle began, would blow their conch shells. Like today, we have bugles. Like here all the time, even in the temple, we can hear the bugles coming from the military center close by. Early mornings or evenings, they blow bugles. So music is very important. Musical instruments are very important in an army. It keeps the fighting spirit of the soldiers. So therefore, nowadays we have bugles and other instruments, but in those days, the chief instrument was the conch shell, and there were also others, as we shall see. And Bhishma, like a lion, he roared, Singhanadam Vinadyochaihi. So he made the sound like a roaring lion. And he blew the conch shell very loudly to drive away Duryodhan's fear and to cheer him up, because he understood that Duryodhan must have become a little doubtful, a little depressed upon seeing the array, the formation of the Pandavas' army. Because Duryodhan did not expect that the Pandavas would have so many warriors. The Pandavas without a kingdom, without money, without home, without anything, and still they had such a huge army. So when Duryodhan saw this, he became a little unnerved. So to cheer him up, Bhishma blew his conch shell. And indirectly Bhishma wanted to tell him that don't worry. Even though I have affection for the Pandavas, you doubt that I will be lenient to the Pandavas? Don't worry. I will be with you. I am prepared to lay down my life for your sake. But also in Bhishma's blowing the conch shell, there was another hidden message. And the message was, no doubt, I am a great warrior, and I will fight to the best of my capacity. Even I am prepared to lay down my life for you. But nevertheless, that is not sufficient to guarantee victory, because Lord Krishna is on the other side. So therefore, I cannot guarantee victory, but I will try my best. So in this way, Bhishma blew his conch shell, understanding the mind and the mood of Duryodhan. And when all the Kuru soldiers heard that, their spirits were uplifted. And various other musical instruments started resounding in the Kuru army. What kind of musical instruments?
Tataha shankhasya bhuryascha panavanaka gomukhah sahasaiva bhyanyanta sashabdastu mulobhavat.
After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. So in this way, the Kaurava army was extremely emboldened by hearing Bhishma's conch shell, and immediately they all started blowing their own instruments. And you can imagine this picture in your mind, what's happening in Kurukshetra. The armies are standing there in front, Arjuna seated on the chariot, Krishna is there in front. In front there is the Kaurava army. Duryodhan has come from his horse, from his chariot, to Dronacharya's chariot. And then he's speaking to Bhishma and Drona, and Bhishma in reply blows the conch shell. And then everybody else in the Kuru army also gets inspired, and they blow their trumpets and conch shells and other instruments. The Kshatriya spirits are now set on fire. Blood is racing through their veins and they're all eager to just start the battle. A Kshatriya is always looking for opportunity to fight a battle. He has courage. He is not afraid of injury to his physical body. So this was the spirit, the mood that is there. And the sound was deafening. And the idea, one of the reasons also such instruments and conchs are blown, is not only to bolster the spirits of one's own army, but also to shatter the hearts of the enemy, to reduce their morale before the fight begins. So the Kaurava army was now feeling inspired that Bhishma had blown his conchs. But then now the Pandavas begin blowing their conchs. And what is the result now? What will happen? Let us see as Sanjay describes the unfolding events on the battlefield to King Dhritarashtra, seated far away, many hundreds of kilometers away in Hastinapur.
Tataha shvetor hayor yukte mahati syandane sthitau madhavah pandavas chaiva divyau shankau pradatmatuhu.
On the other side, that is the side of the Pandavas, both Lord Krishna and Lord Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conchs. Now, an interesting description of the chariot of Arjuna. Tataha shvetir hayor yukte. Shweta means white. Hayor means there means to yoke. Mahati, great, sandane chariot, sthitau, they were situated. So Krishna and Arjuna were situated on a great chariot, mahati sandane. And this chariot was drawn by wonderful horses, shvetir hayor yukte. And on this wonderful chariot they were seated there, which was equipped with many wonderful weapons, and many, many other wonderful things. It was glistening like gold, and the horses were white, and very, very powerful. There is a wonderful history of how Arjuna got this chariot. And this story appears in the Mahabharata. One time, this was much before the battle took place, when King Dhritarashtra had divided the kingdom into 50-50, half-half, half for the Pandavas, half for the Kauravas. And the Kauravas were ruling in Hastinapur, and the Pandavas were ruling in Indraprastha. One time Lord Krishna was visiting the Pandavas in Indraprastha from Dwarka. Having stayed there for many days, one day Arjuna said to Krishna, "Let us go out and enjoy some pleasure spots that we have made near the river, near the forest. We have made many nice facilities for enjoyment for ourselves, so let us go there." So Krishna agreed. And both Krishna and Arjuna, who were such close, intimate friends, went together. They stayed in those pleasure homes, enjoyed themselves, ate nice foods, drank nice things, chatted, played games. And one day they went on a walk, and they came to the border of a forest. And they sat down on a bench. This forest was called Khandava, Khandava Prastha, Khandava forest. And as they were sitting, they suddenly saw a Brahman coming out from within the forest. He was glowing with brilliance like gold. His beard and hair were also golden in color. He was very powerfully built, and he was striding very purposefully towards where Krishna and Arjuna were seated. And then he spoke in a very deep, resounding voice. He said, "I know you both to be the foremost among men, and know me to be a Brahmana with a voracious appetite, and I wish to eat." So Krishna and Arjuna were always charitable towards Brahmins. So they said, "My dear Brahman, we are willing to give you all kinds of foodstuffs to eat. What may we bring for you?" So this Brahman said, "I am not an ordinary Brahman, and my food is also not ordinary. I am Agni, Dev himself. And my food is dust. I want to eat this. So Krishna and Arjuna asked, well, why only this forest? We can give you many other things. He said, no, I want only this forest. And there is a reason for this. One time, there was a king called King Shvetaki. And he performed many yajnas. And in the yajna, as you know, one offers ghee as oblations. So King Shvetaki, however, offered more ghee than what was required. Too much ghee. And Agni Dev accepts these offerings because the ghee is offered in the Agni or the fire. But since too much ghee is offered, Agni Dev develops some illness because of excess ghee. Those amongst us who have taken excess ghee, we know that we fall ill. We have so many stomach problems and other problems that take place when you eat too much ghee. So Agni Dev said, I developed some illness. My body became dysfunctional, and Brahmaji advised me that there are some very, very good herbs in the Khandala forest. If you burn up that forest, in other words, if you eat that forest, all these herbs will cure your ailments. So Agni tried many times to do that, but within that forest lived Takshak Nag with his family. Takshak Nag was a close friend of Indradev, the king of the Devas. So therefore, every time Agni tried to burn the forest, Indra would let loose torrents of rain and the fire would be extinguished even as it just started. So Agni became very disheartened. He went back to Brahma and says, what do I do now? So Brahma said, then go to Indraprastha. Krishna and Arjuna are there. Know them to be directly Nara and Narayan. Arjuna and Krishna. They will be able to help you. So then the Brahman said, I have come to you. So please know that what my desire is authorized. It is not a sinful desire. It is authorized by Brahma himself. And Brahma personally has told me that all the living beings living here have committed great sins in the past, and therefore by their karma they deserve to die in fire. So therefore what I am saying now is perfectly authorized and proper. So please help me to get rid of my illness. So Arjuna replied, certainly, my dear Brahman, we are most happy to help you. I have many divine weapons, astras, but I do not have any bow or any chariot from which I can release these weapons. So unless you supply these to me, I will not be able to protect you or fulfill your desires. So Agni said, all right, I will do the needful. So Agni, he meditated and called upon Varuna, the demigod or the devata of the oceans. And Varundev immediately came, and Agni Dev said, please bring some nice weapons and chariots for Arjun, because Agni knew that Varundev had many weapons stored at the bottom of the ocean. Our scientists may not see them, but they were there. So Varundev immediately fulfilled that desire, and he brought many weapons. And Agni said, please also bring a wonderful chariot for Arjuna. So Varun Dev, he brought Somadev's chariot. Soma is the moon god. And this chariot was jeweled, exquisitely beautiful. Priceless rubies and emeralds and precious stones were fixed on this chariot. And it was shining like the sun. And the horses were also white and strong and powerful. So powerful that they could go anywhere. And these horses specially came from the land of the Gandharvas. They were presented by Chitraratha, the king of the Gandharvas. Gandharvas are residents of higher planets whose special quality is that they can sing very beautifully. So, therefore, anyone who can sing very nicely in this planet is compared to Gandharva. So sometimes there are famous musicians also who accept this Gandharva title. So Arjuna received this wonderful chariot, and Agni Dev said, with this chariot you will be able to travel in all the three worlds. And these horses can take you anywhere. And you will always be victorious when you travel on this chariot. So having heard this, Arjuna became very happy And he also received a Gandiva bow. And then he twanged the string and it made a resounding sound, and everybody in the forest started trembling with fear upon hearing that sound. And that aroused Arjuna's Kshatriya spirit, having got this wonderful bow. And then he ascended the chariot, wonderful chariot, and found two pillars of inexhaustible bows and many, many other weapons. And this is how the chariot actually came to Arjuna. And Agnidev also presented to Lord Krishna Kaumudaki club, Krishna's club weapon. He also presented many other gifts to Bhima and the others. And there is a long story after that. Eventually Agni burnt the whole Khanda forest. Arjuna and Krishna personally protected Agnidev from being extinguished by Indra, and this pastime took place. So this is how this wonderful chariot that has been described here in this verse came into the hands of Arjuna.
But being situated on this chariot, Arjuna was with Krishna. Krishna is being addressed here as Madhav. Ma refers to Lakshmi, Dhamma refers to husband. So the word Madhav means husband of Lakshmi. So where there is Lakshmi, who is the goddess of fortune, there will definitely be, wherever there is Krishna, there will also be his wife, Lakshmi, who is the goddess of fortune. So therefore, there must be fortune wherever there is Krishna. And Krishna was with Arjuna for opulence, and also victory. Yatra Yogeshwarah Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdharah, Patra Shri Vijaya Bhuti Dhruva Niti Matir Mama. In the very last verse of the Gita, Sanjay describes, Yatra Yogeshwarah Krishna, wherever there is Yogeshwar Krishna, and wherever there is Partha, Dhanurdharah, the wielder of the bow, Arjun, Patra, there will be Shri, opulence, Vijaya, that is victory, Bhuti, extraordinary power, Dhruva Niti, Niti means morality. Certainly, Dhruva, there will definitely be these four things, wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna. So, on this extraordinary chariot presented by Agnidev, both Krishna and Arjuna were seated there. So, victory for Arjuna and opulence was a certainty. And then, it is also described here, Divyo Shankho Padat Matuhu. The Shankha of Arjuna and Krishna are called Divya, divine, transcendental. This word is not used for Bhishma Dev's conch shell. Bhishma simply blew his conch shell like a lion. But here Krishna and Arjuna, they blew their divine conch shells. And what is the name of the divine conch shells? That is mentioned here in the next verse. Text number 15.
Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayah Pongram Datsma Mahashankham Bhimakarma Vrukodarah.
Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjun blew his, the Devadatta, and Bhima, the voracious eater and the performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Pongra. Lord Krishna is addressed in this verse as Rishikesh. Rishika means senses, our indriya. Isha means the Lord. So Rishikesh means the Lord of our senses. Our senses, like our eyes, our ears, and so on, they do not belong to us. Nothing belongs to us. Even our body doesn't belong to us. This is all the property of Lord Krishna. So therefore, the senses and the body must be used only in the service of the master of the senses, of Rishikesha. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchyate. This is called Bhakti.
when you use your Rishika, your senses, in the service of Rishikesha, the master of the senses, this is called bhakti. So Krishna was fully controlling Arjuna's senses, Arjuna's vision, Arjuna's sense of hearing, his intelligence, his power, his ability. So what did Arjuna have to fear? So in this way, Krishna has different names. Actually, God has no name, because God's name is given to us by somebody. But according to his various pastimes, his activities, he is given different names by his devotees. So Krishna means all attractive, and depending on the different kinds of activities that Lord Krishna does, he gets different names, like Makhan Chor, when he stole butter, or he is called Ran Chor, who ran away from the battlefield. He is called Giridhari because he lifted the Govardhan hill. He is called Yashoda Nandan because he took birth, or he appeared to take birth from Yashoda. So in this way Krishna has many names, and Rishikesh is one of those names. Similarly, Arjun is also addressed here as Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya, the winner of wealth. Before this battle took place, King Yudhishthir performed the Rajasuya Yajna, a very wonderful sacrificial performance which established him as Vishwa Samrat, as the emperor of the whole world. And before one performs the Rajasuya Yajna, it is necessary for the to be emperor to subdue all the other smaller kings in the whole world. So therefore, the emperor sends out his armies to different parts of the globe, and other kings who accept that emperor as a supreme, they simply give some tribute, some gold, some diamonds, some wealth, and they accept that emperor as supreme. Those who do not accept, they have to fight. When the emperor's forces subdue those challengers, and then they are forced to accept the emperor as king. So in this way, before the Rajasuya Yajna, Yudhishthir Maharaj sent all his brothers in different directions to conquer the different directions of the world. And Bhima went to the east, Sahadeva went in one direction, Nakul went in another direction, and Arjuna went to the north. And in the Mahabharata it is described, as he went from place to place, he conquered various tribes, conquered various kings. He reached Kashmir, he conquered the kings of those lands. He reached north and also reached, crossed the Himalayas. And there were a race of people there called Kimpurushas, who were semi-celestial beings, born off from Yaksha ladies. Yaksha, Gandharva, Kinnara, Kimpurusha, these are all semi-celestial living beings in the universe. So they were living here. And so Arjun conquered them even, although it was so difficult to conquer them. Then he reached another place, which was where Gandharvas resided. He defeated them in battle, subdued all of them. Finally, Arjun reached a place called Harivarsha, far beyond the Himalayas, north of the Himalayas. And when he reached that place high up in the mountains, then suddenly he saw some huge, able-bodied guards approach him and stop him. And they said, "Halt here, my dear son of Kunti. You cannot go beyond this point, because no human is allowed to go beyond this point. First of all, you are not powerful enough to enter. And secondly, even somehow if you were to enter this place, we would not be able to see anything here, because the residents of these areas and the areas here themselves are not visible to ordinary human eyes. So do not disturb the law of nature. Kindly return from here. All good fortune be with you." So this means that even on Earth planet, there are many areas which are not even today accessible to human beings. Even if physically one has access to them, one cannot see. By science, we can hardly understand even a fraction
of this earth planet, what to speak of the universe. So Arjuna understood that this was a realm, even on the earth planet, where celestial beings, residents of higher planets, were residing. So therefore, he respected that, and he said, all right, I will not try to enter, but you must recognize Yudhishthir as the undisputed emperor of this planet. So very gladly the guard said, yes, certainly. So we will pay you tribute. So they gave him much gold, much wealth. So Yudhishthir had conquered so many kings, and he brought back all this wealth. And also Arjun also found some other wealth that had been thrown away by Brahmins. You see, it was customary that Kshatriyas would give a lot of wealth to Brahmins. It was a duty of Brahmins to receive in charity. It was a duty of Kshatriyas to give in charity. But Brahmanas, by their nature, were duty-bound to live a very simple life. So it was a duty of Brahmanas not just to receive charity, but also to give back in charity. These are the six duties of a Brahman. Pathana Patan, he has to study and teach. Yajan Yajan, he has to worship and teach others how to worship. Dana Pratigraha, he has to accept in charity and give in charity. So in the time of the earlier kings, the Brahmins received so much in charity that when the Brahmanas themselves wanted to give the extra wealth to other Brahmins, every Brahmin said, I have so much, I don't need anything, you take mine. So finally all the Brahmins were frustrated. What to do with all our wealth? We don't need this. If we keep this wealth, it will destroy our Brahmanical nature. How unlike today, isn't it? So what did they do? They went to the Himalayas and dumped all the wealth there. And heaved a sigh of relief. Ah, now we are free from this burden. And they came back. So they were happy because the wealth of the Brahmanas is their poverty and their austerity. So therefore Yudhishthira Maharaj also got access to this wealth. So he brought back all this wealth for King Yudhishthira's Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore he was called Dhananjay. Then Bhima is called Bhima Karma Vrikodara. He is called Vrikodara. Udara means belly. Vrika is fire, in whose belly fire is always burning, which means he is always hungry. One of very voracious appetite, one who can eat a lot, is called Vrikodara. So Bhima was like that. Whenever the Pandavas during their exile would bring back some food to Mother Kunti, then they would all share the food. But do you know what was the proportion in which they will share the food? First 50% went to Bhima. And the rest of the 50% was shared by the others. By the other brothers, the mother and the wife. So because Bhima couldn't live without that. And all the others would follow Ekadashi Vrat. They would follow fasting and Ekadashi, but Bhima couldn't do it. He said, you asked me to do anything but fast. I need food because the fire in my belly is very strong. So he asked Vyasadeva, please find one way out for me. Vyasadeva said, without following Ekadashi, you will go to hell. He said, what to do? This is impossible for me to follow. So Vedvyas said, all right, for you I will make a concession. So Vedvyas, she made one special Ekadashi called Nirjal Ekadashi, which has just gone by recently. And if anyone misses the Ekadashis in the other parts of the year, you follow Nirjal Ekadashi and this one Ekadashi, and then you get the benefits of all the other Ekadashis. So Bhima was told, okay, you eat and drink on others, but at least one day in the year now, that you have to tolerate. So Bhima agreed. With great difficulty, he managed to fast on one day of the year, and he got the benefits of the fasting on Ekadashis in the other parts of the year. Also, you know the story of Bakasur. When they were in Ekachakra, in exile, they were living in the house of a Brahmin. And there is this terrible asura called Bakasur who was there. And Bakasur used to eat indiscriminately the people of that village. So the village came together and they reached an agreement with Bakasur. And they said that don't indiscriminately kill. Every day we will send you a cartload of food, animals. But he said, I want human also. So they said, all right. One human will come along with the cart. He will ride the chariot or the cart and come and you can eat him also. So turn by turn, every family will provide one human being. In this way the village protected itself. So when the Pandavas were there one day, it was a turn of this Brahmin family to send their one person for Bakasura. So the husband, wife, son were all arguing with each other. No, I will go, I will go. So Bhima said, Arjuna, others said, don't worry, let Bhima go, he'll handle everything. But Bhima said, make sure the cart is full of food. So they made sure the cart was full. So Bhima was very happy. He was happy for two reasons. One, because he got so much food. And second, because there was a prospect of a battle. So he was able to eat. He was in really good spirits that day. Otherwise, Bhima was always depressed because he had to live off forest food, fruits and flour. What is this for Bhima? Nothing. So then Bhima sat happily on the chariot and he was eating. And as the cart approached Bakasur, Bhima was so absorbed in eating that he got late. And Bakasur came wondering, what's happening? My food is late. He became very angry and he came outside. And the cart was parked outside and Bhima was happily, busily eating, not concerned about Bakasur. Bakasur was very powerful. He attacked Bhima. And Bhima was thinking, what a waste of time, what a nuisance value, this Bakasur. I have not finished eating and he wants to fight with me. So he kept Bakasur away with his left hand. Each time Bakasur attacked, and with the right hand he kept on eating. And he did this till all the food was finished. And Bakasur has become more and more angry, furious. And he was attacking violently more and more each time. But each time, Bhima just kept him off with his left hand. Finally, when the cart food was finished, then Bhima washed up. He said, okay, now I'm ready for you. And then very effortlessly, he killed Bakasur. And all the villagers in Ekachakra were very, very happy. And so was Bhima. So this is Bhima. So here we see, he had a huge appetite, and side by side it is said Bhima Karma. It is not that he simply ate a lot of food. He also performed Bhima Karma, which means Herculean tasks, impossible for others to perform, like killing of Bakasur. So Prabhupada explains that if someone wants to eat a lot, it's fine, but he must also work accordingly. For those who eat more, you work more. And if you're working more, then it doesn't matter if you eat more. But eat as much as you work. You need for your work. So because he performed such Herculean tasks, like killing such rakshasas like Bakasur or Hidimba, etc., so he was called Bhima Karma. So Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha. Then next time, we will discuss. For shortage of time, we can't discuss now. These stories are so wonderful, we just go on. We will discuss the history behind the conch shell of Krishna. And also the history behind the conch shell of Arjuna. That we will do next time. But there is an important announcement. Next time is an important festival for us. It is Balaram Jayanti. It happens to fall on Saturday. It is the birthday of Lord Balaram, the elder brother of Lord Krishna. So in the morning we will be having a program, just a lecture on Balaram Leela. And in the evening we will be having a big festival. In honor of Lord Balaram, we will have Kirtan, we will have Abhishek, and discussion of the pastimes of Lord Balaram. So we will not have our regular Bhagavad Gita class as we do now, next Saturday. Instead we will be having the Balaram Jayanti Mahotsav. And also the Saturday after that is the day before Janmashtami. Janmashtami is on Sunday the 12th, and we will have a 3-day festival. 11th, 12th and 13th in the evenings. So 11th is the day before Janmashtami for us, but people outside follow it on the 11th. So we also keep darshan open till late on the 11th, Saturday. We will also have a drama here performed by devotees, amateurs, not professionals. So it will not be like a professional drama, but Krishna doesn't see professionalism, he sees bhakti. So do come and witness this nice drama. There will be a lecture after that, and then there will be the Janmashtami festivals on 12th and 13th also. From Monday, after Balram Jayanti, or Sunday morning actually, we will have every morning here discussion on Krishna Leela, as we do every year. Between Balram Jayanti and Krishna Jayanti, every morning there is, from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, we discuss various pastimes of Krishna. We have finished last time with Brahma Vimohan Leela, and this time we will begin with Kaliya Daman Leela, when Krishna subdued the serpent Kaliya. So therefore, this Bhagavad Gita class will only continue the third Saturday from now, because two Saturdays we will have a program. So even though the Bhagavad Gita class will not be there, please do come and participate in the two festivals here. And now we will have the festival of looking at Lord Krishna's beautiful form, and we will chant his holy name. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.